Chapter 4, Jerusalem's Destruction, Part 2. Listen, on and near the wall which is around the Tower of Antonia, there is bitter fighting. The shouting of the combatants sounds far around. The swords clash. The brave Roman soldiers do their utmost to scale the collapsed walls. The Jews defend themselves with the courage of desperation. For many days, the Roman iron battering rams have battered the heavy, thick walls. But it was all in vain. The Romans did not succeed in battering a breach in the wall. The wall stands immovable. Then they shall try it in a different way. They dig a large, deep hole under the foundations. However, under the command of John of Gischala, the zealots do not calmly stand by. On the contrary, they set fire to the battering rams of the Romans. They risk an attack and penetrate even into the camp of the Romans, where they strike down the Roman soldiers among the tents. For a moment, confusion prevails among the Romans. They had not expected that. However, they soon rally, and the Jews are driven back. In the Roman army camp, Titus and his officers deliberate what they should do next. Finally, they decide to surround the entire city with an earthen wall, so that not the least food can be brought into the city from the outside. That is a gigantic task. How long shall it take before they are finished with that? Titus commands that all who can in any way be spared must help in doing this, and, in the incredible short time of only 3 days, that enormous task is completed. The earthen wall is reinforced with 30 entrenchments, and from that moment it became impossible for the Jews to go out and get food outside of the city, because the Roman soldiers keep a sharp lookout. The city of Jerusalem is completely shut out from the outside world. Again, one of the prophecies of the Lord Jesus is being fulfilled. During his sojourn here upon earth, the Savior had said, "For the days shall come upon thee, that thine enemies shall cast a trench about thee, and compass thee round, and keep thee in on every side." See Luke 19, verse 43. This prophecy is literally fulfilled here. In the meantime, the Romans proceed with the undermining of the wall. Finally, great cracks appear, and at a given moment, and through its own weight, a section of the immense wall collapses with a roar. Immediately thereupon, Titus gives the command to storm the city. They fight murderously, but the Romans press forward irresistibly, not taking heed of the enormous losses which they suffer. When one Roman falls, 10 others take his place. Finally, the Roman soldiers succeed in scaling the walls. A loud hurrah resounds. Are they victorious? No, not really. To the great astonishment and disappointment of the Roman soldiers, a brand new wall stands behind the collapsed wall. John of Gischala hastily had his soldiers build a second wall behind the first, and on that new wall the Jews stand ready to furiously defend that to the utmost. A cloud of arrows whizzed toward the surprised Romans. What now? Must the Romans start from the beginning again? No. In a dark night, a small group of undaunted Romans steal noiselessly nearer. Extremely cautious, they climb the new wall. The Jewish watchers notice nothing. Because of being deadly tired from the exhausting struggle of the last days, they have fallen asleep. The sleeping watchers are taken by surprise and killed by those nearer sneaking Romans. Suddenly, a blast of the trumpet resounds in the silence of the night. That is the signal agreed upon. Titus stands ready with a strong military force to assist that small group of brave Roman soldiers. When he hears the signal that was agreed upon, at his command, they storm ahead. The Jews are frightened awake and become confused. Dumbfounded, they notice what has happened. That paralyzes them for a moment, and of this the Romans take eager advantage, and soon they are lord and master of the Tower of Antonia. The Jewish defenders withdraw themselves into the temple. Again, the Romans have conquered a part of the city. Again, they have come a step closer to the victory, but still, the fighting is not yet finished, because even now, the Jews continue the unequal struggle. Come, let us take a look within the city itself. Conditions are terrible there. It is almost unbelievable. Crammed with people, almost without food, a terrible famine is raging. Could that be otherwise? If they only had that grain which they had willfully destroyed by burning it up. The inhabitants are ravenously hungry. Mothers snatch the food out of the mouth of their own children. Children fight with their parents for a mouth full of food. The most loathsome things are eaten. Only the wealthiest people are able to buy a little food at enormous high prices. With wasted faces, men and women, children and gray-headed ones stagger along until, due to exhaustion, they sink down and die. Look, there marches a band of zealots through the wretched city. With haggard eyes, they look around to see if they can discover any food. The dwellings of the rich are broken into, and the little food which may be found there, the zealots take away unmercifully. Without pity, they even snatch it out of the little children's convulsively closed hands. The zealots look like hungry beasts of prey. Whoever dares to resist is struck down. In that way, large troops of plundering, hungry zealots march daily throughout the city. The people tremble because of them. One day, a detachment of zealots went out again looking for some food. Suddenly, they stand still. They smell something, something delicious. The aroma of roasted meat penetrates to them. Like maniacs, they run to that house from whence that aroma meets them. They kick the door open and storm inside. Their eyes blaze with desire. But look, already a woman comes laughingly to meet them. "You have meat," they scream. "Give it to us, or else..." They clench their fists threateningly. "Then follow me," she invites them mysteriously. Inquisitively, hankering after that desirable food, those ferocious soldiers follow her. They enter a room. In that room stands a table covered with a cloth. The woman lifts the cloth a little and... Indeed, there lies meat upon a dish. But just look once. What can that be? The hungry zealots shrink back, because on that dish lies, I hardly dare to mention it, it is so terrible, on that dish lies the remainder of a roasted child. Having become insane through the terrible gnawings of hunger, that mother had killed her own child, roasted and eaten it. With a silly laugh, she offers the remainder of her meal to the zealots. But that is even too dreadful for those cruel zealots who stand in awe of nothing. They shrink back aghast and refuse to eat this food. As fast as possible, while shuddering with horror, they leave the home of this insane woman. Some authors tell us that the name of that woman was Mary, and that she was the daughter of Eleazar, the Jewish commander, who with all his men were murdered by John of Gischala. The Lord Jesus had foretold that times would come when those without children would be happier than those that did have children. This prophecy is now also fulfilled. You can realize that hundreds of people died daily of misery and hunger. At first, the Jewish commander had the corpses buried of those that died. But finally, so many died that it was no longer possible to bury them. Then the corpses were cast over the wall at night by the thousands, where they remained as prey for the wild animals. When Titus heard that, tears filled his eyes. With a hand lifted up, he says, "I am innocent of all that misery." He asks them again to stop this foolish conflict and to surrender themselves. But those Jewish commanders refuse obstinately. They have no pity with the poor, hungry population. In their foolish pride, they refuse every offer from Titus. They hold on against all odds. High above everything rise the large, beautiful buildings of the temple. Especially during the reign of Herod, the temple was greatly beautified. Various buildings had been added to it. After the Tower of Antonia had fallen, the battering rams of the Romans are placed against the temple wall. Titus would have gladly spared the sanctuary. He had even offered the Jews to choose another battlefield. He had promised that not one Roman soldier would enter the temple. But it was of no use. The messengers of Titus were received with scornful laughter. Every offer of the Roman general, however good it was intended, was scornfully rejected. The Jews thought, "The temple cannot be lost. At the last moment, the Messiah shall come." By so doing, Titus was forced to continue the fight. However, the battering rams batter in vain day and night against the walls. Then the Romans use other tactics. They set fire to the annexes of the temple. Soon the flames lick along the beams, and the burning wood crackles. Columns of smoke float above the city as a forerunner of the approaching total ruin of the sanctuary. The smoldering, half-charred gates are forced open, and slow but sure, the annexes are conquered by the Romans. The Jews defend themselves with the courage of a lion. They perform deeds of valor, but yet they are forced to retreat. There is severe fighting. The holy places where at one time the priests of the Lord walked about in white garments, where at one time the sacrifices were brought to the glory of God, are now the scene of fierce fighting. Blood streams alongside the consecrated altars. The daily offerings cease. It can no longer be done. Around and within the temple, an embittered conflict rages. Slowly the fire destroys the annexes. Every day a portion thereof collapses. But the main building of the house of God is still standing. Titus desires that the temple itself shall be spared. To that end, he issues the most strict commands. But the King of Kings had said that one stone would not be left upon another, and that word shall be fulfilled. The siege has lasted for months already, and the fighting continues undiminished. And thus, the 10th of August of the year 70 draws near. The Romans make a fierce assault. Both friend and foe fall. The struggle surges back and forth. Who shall be the victor? Look, a Roman soldier seized a burning piece of wood and hurled it through an open window into the temple itself, into the main building. We do not know whether that piece of wood fell against a curtain, but in a moment the flames flared up high from the midst of the temple. When the Romans see that, they are frightened for a moment, but soon they try to fan the fire more and more. Titus himself came running. He immediately gives the command to quench the fire, but his soldiers no longer listen to his commands. Titus threatens with the most severe punishments, but it is of no use. On the contrary, they set fire to other places in the building. It can no longer be controlled. Paralyzed with fear and with amazed eyes, the Jewish defenders behold what is taking place. They see the impossible happening before their eyes. They can hardly believe it, but they must believe it. Do they not hear the crackling of the wood? Do they not hear the roaring of the non-respecting flames? Do they not see the red burning glaze in the interior of the temple? The fright has paralyzed them so much that they forget to fight, that they forget to defend themselves. As defenseless ones, they allow themselves to be slain by the Romans. Those of the priests that are still left put their hands before their face and throw themselves into the midst of the flames. They do not want to see the destruction of their sanctuary. Some of them stood there crying like a child. The Roman soldiers plunder and steal as much as they can, for soon everything will be consumed to ashes. There are still 6,000 women and children who have sought refuge on the galleries. All these people perish miserably. Titus himself enters the sanctuary, and being affected, he beholds the destruction of that beautiful building of the temple. He was unable to stop it. The Jews who lived in the upper city have climbed upon the roofs of their houses and behold with horror that the temple is ablaze. Their mournful cry is heard afar off. When finally, on the evening of that terrible day, the sun sets, then the beautiful, proud building of the Temple of the Jews has become a smoking heap of rubbish. The destruction of the temple was so complete that not one stone remained upon another. It is noteworthy that the first temple, the Temple of Solomon, was also destroyed on the 10th of August by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. That was 668 years ago. God is an avenger of sin. Although Simon still defended the upper city, after the destruction of the temple, the resistance of the Jews was no longer so intense. The strength of their resistance was broken, and their courage was shattered. A month later, Titus was lord and master of the entire city. No, it was Jerusalem no more. The Roman soldiers set fire to all dwellings. They never rested before the city was entirely destroyed and burned. The terrible judgment of God had come. The Jews have suffered terribly. 1,100,000 Jews, men, women, and children, lost their lives in the desperate struggle. Tens of thousands were made prisoners, and a portion of them were carried to Rome. Both Jewish commanders, John of Gischala and Simon, were led away as prisoners by Titus. Thousands of Jews were sent to Egypt in ships. There they were to be sold as slaves. In long, long lines, they stood on the slave market. But there were so many Jewish slaves that finally there were no more buyers. Josephus writes in his book that a Jew was exchanged for a pair of slippers. They nearly gave the Jews away, but no one wanted them. What now? There are still 3,000 Jews left. They know not what to do with them. And then? Then they let those 3,000 Jews starve to death. Terrible, is it not? Poor, poor people. Now was fulfilled that which had been prophesied in Deuteronomy 28, verse 68, where we read, "And the Lord shall bring thee into Egypt again with ships, by the way whereof I spake unto thee. Thou shalt see it no more again, and there ye shall be sold unto your enemies for bondmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you." That was foretold by Moses already. This would happen to them if they did not walk in the statutes of the Lord, when they would trample God's mercies underfoot. That terrible judgment would come upon them. And they have returned to Egypt in ships. They were sold, but finally there was no more a buyer because they were far too many, and 3,000 of them died of famine. For centuries, God had had patience with the Jewish people. He had sent his servants and prophets among them to warn them seriously, but they did not listen. They had maltreated God's servants, yea, had even killed them. Finally, God sent them his son. Perhaps they would hear him. But they had delivered him to the Romans. They had cried out, "Crucify him." Yea, they had the courage to call that innocent spilled blood upon them and their children. But now the measure of their sins and wickedness was full. God has settled accounts with the Jews. Punishment has come, and that was severe. But that self-same God still lives. Do you believe that? Do we ever think about that? Then let us seek the Lord before it is too late. The streets of Rome that enormous capital of the Roman Empire, are filled with people. They have even climbed upon the housetops, on the steps of the white marble temples, on the statues, in order to get a good view. What is it that they want to see? Listen, cheers are heard in the distance, which constantly come closer and grow louder. The waiting Romans crane their necks to look, to look. Yes, there he comes. There he comes. Who is coming? Just look. A large procession of people draws near. The thunderous cheering grows louder. In the midst of that numberless multitude, a chariot rides slowly through Rome's streets. It is a triumphal chariot, and on that chariot stands Titus, the great victor. The Roman general stares proudly ahead of him. The people cheer him enthusiastically. With his brave warriors, he has returned from the Jewish country. Now he stands in his triumphal chariot and rides triumphantly into Rome. The treasures of the Jewish temple at Jerusalem, that is, those which they were able to save from the burning sea of fire before everything was burned to ashes, are being carried along. To honor him, the Roman people have erected a beautiful arch, an arch of honor. That is the triumphal arch of Titus. That arch still stands in Rome. Behind the procession follow thousands of Jewish prisoners. Some will have to serve the Romans, while others shall be cast before the wild animals, and the Roman people shall cheer when the arena shall be colored red with their blood. Poor, poor prisoners. They have been carried away from their country, which they shall never see again. They risked everything. They have lost everything. Those Jewish commanders, heavily shackled and with bowed head, walk thereto. John of Gischala is sentenced to life imprisonment. The sentence of death is pronounced upon Simon. They take him to a high cliff and mercilessly thrust him into the fathomless depth so that he is smashed upon the rocks. That is the terrible end of those wicked Jewish commanders. They had no mercy upon others, and now no mercy is shown to them. Besides, the Jews have come into the lowest contempt. Before those days, they were the fiercest enemies of the gospel. But that is all past. Yes, they remain hostile, but their power is broken. They have nothing to say anymore. They have no more influence. The Arabs have come to dwell in the Jewish country. For ages, Jerusalem has been trodden down by the Gentiles. For ages the Jews have wandered about as exiles upon the earth, despised, persecuted. Many times they were driven about like wild animals. His blood be on us and on our children. They have known it. That blood did come on them. Even in the last war, hence the Second World War, more than 6 million Jews perished. They were murdered by Hitler and his followers. By thousands they were driven into the gas chambers. Now, in the last years, those of them who remained returned again to their country. Hundreds of thousands are living in the land of their fathers again. The Arabs have been repulsed. What shall the end of all that be? I do not know. No one knows what shall happen in the future. Only God knows that. From this terrible history, we may learn that God is just. God shall punish sin, also those of our land and people.